Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Things aren't always as they appear, and some bombshells might be hiding in plain sight. I'm Katie Bilotti, and this is Found Objects, a storytelling history podcast. Welcome in, everyone. Welcome back to Found Objects History Podcast with me, Katie Bilotti. I am so glad you guys are here. I know I sound kind of raspy slash just congested right now, which is true. I am congested. I am ridden with allergies right now, bogged down by the pollen in New York City that has been taking us by storm. I swear everyone and their mother is going through a hard time right now because of allergy season. I love spring, don't get me wrong, but this is just madness. Like every day, I don't know if I'm going to wake up with like itchy eyes or my nose is bothering me or my chest. And today I woke up with a raspy voice and it just kind of hurts to speak. So luckily for you and for me, I actually pre-recorded today's story, so I won't sound like this the entire episode. I did a bit of planning because I know this hits me every year and I always struggle. I sometimes lose my voice. So I pre-recorded some episodes and have them in the bank for the days where this happens. So here I am learning, living and learning from my past failures with preparation. So today's story revolves around a children's toy that created violence, that generated violence to the extent of creating a riot in multiple states across the United States back in the 70s. So our story takes us back to the 70s, a real groovy era, and we're going to be talking about a toy and how the beginning, like the early moments of this toy being created, is often clouded with inaccuracies. People tend to not really know the truth of where this invention came from, and there's a lawsuit involved. Someone ripped off someone else, and again, no one really knows this. So we're gonna get into it. It's about a children's toy, but you're gonna be shook when you hear what it is and how much drama there was involved with it that really no one seems to know about. So I know that was really elusive and kind of mysterious, and that is exactly what I was going for. So without further ado, thank you guys for listening. As always, rate us 5 stars, leave a review, follow us on Instagram, and now into the episode. So today's story that I'm going to tell you is a groovy one. We're going back in time to the 1970s, so think shag carpets, short shorts and tube socks, the Watergate scandal, that time period, when I was negative 25 because, yeah, born in 95, so in 1970. Wow, 1970 was actually not very recent. It feels like it was pretty recent, but it really wasn't. So anyway, we're going to get there. We're going to go to the 1970s. We're going to take our time machine over there. But for now, let's stick around in the present for a beat to talk about something that honestly has been on the tip of everyone's tongue. I feel like this one trending object has been the talk of the town and the object of scandal and fights and just like a total frenzy. And this is a good starting point for our story today. So if you haven't been living under a rock, or honestly, even if you have been living under a rock and like don't really feel like you're in with the trends, you've definitely heard of the Stanley Cup phenomenon. Not the hockey trophy, the actual like drinking cup variety of Stanley Cup. And it's become this total frenzied phenomenon. When you open TikTok, there's a Stanley Cup. When you open Instagram, your favorite influencer has a Stanley Cup. On YouTube, like, it's one of those things where it doesn't matter how old you are or like where you live. I feel like Stanley Cups have become that it girl accessory for teenagers, for moms, for girls at Pilates, for people at work. Like, everyone seems to have this cup. So we know them. We know about the Stanley Cup. We know them, but do we love them? Or have we just been sucked into the latest consumer marketing scheme, succumbed to FOMO, to the fear of missing out, the age-old tale of needing to own the hottest thing or collect them all, but not being really sure why? Like, we don't really know why we're doing it or where they came from, but it's this addictive energy of wanting to be a part of something. And this might be a hot take, but in my opinion, I don't know if these cups are worth the hype. I'm using a fake Stanley right now, or it's technically not even, it's similar to a Stanley, but it has a different straw, one that you can tuck in. Because my biggest complaint, my biggest gripe with the Stanley cup is I feel like the straw is just impractical for people that don't get around via car. Maybe I am not hip to like the latest accessory to fight this problem, but I feel like when I'm walking to Pilates or I'm walking anywhere and I want my water bottle, like I'm going to a shoot or like something, I don't know, some various thing that I have to do out of the house, I can't just like put my cup in the cup holder of my car because I don't have one. I have to carry it around or run the risk of it exploding in my bag. So I like this other Stanley variety. It's not from Stanley. I don't even know the brand. It's like some random brand from Marshalls. So I don't know if I totally understand the hype of Stanley cups, but a lot of people do. A lot of people have these massive collections. If you watch the news around the new year, you might have even seen the frenzy at Target. People stormed Target for the exclusive Stanley and Starbucks collab. It was this wintry pink special edition Stanley that had people literally falling all over each other to get one. A drinking cup that literally flew off the shelves. It was sold out everywhere within minutes of hitting the floor. Not to be confused with the Target x Stanley Galentine's collab, which also sold out immediately. So what makes these Stanley cups so special? What makes any collectible object so special? Why are we obsessed with collecting them all and being in on the latest trends? Let's talk about it. It really boils down to the notion that in our lives, we tend to regret inaction more than we regret action. So the idea, the concept that if I buy something and I don't like it, I don't enjoy it, that really doesn't bother me as much as the idea that, oh, I could have bought this and enjoyed it, but I didn't. I didn't even give myself the opportunity to potentially enjoy this. So like I said, like we often regret inaction more than action. And that's exactly why we want these things. We don't want to regret missing the boat and having FOMO. Even if we don't get the hype, we buy one just to be a part of the movement. It's almost like feeling like you need to go to a party, even if you don't want to go. Like you don't feel like you want to go, but you're like, what if it's the best night of my life and I didn't go? What if I meet the love of my life at the bar? What if, you know, you think about all the what ifs, and that is so, it's almost like fear-inducing that you could miss out on something. So you force yourself to do things and you want to participate. You want, it's the FOMO of it all, but it's also just that fear of what if I miss out on something that could change my life? There's something to be said about the community created by a shared purchasing experience. Think about it. When you meet someone new, you often gravitate towards conversation that comes out of aligned interests. In this day and age, it's not uncommon to have a full-blown conversation about a new rare beauty blush or a Summer Fridays lip balm, let alone a Stanley cup. And we've all been there. We meet someone new. There's not much to talk about. You kind of are like, oh, I like your lip gloss. What is that? I like your shirt. Like, where'd you get it? And that's like this shared experience. You're in the bathroom line at a bar talking to a girl in front of you because you're just like, you know, waiting, trying not to pee yourself. And you're like, oh, I love your shoes. Where'd you get them? Like, that is a subject of conversation. So today it could be the latest TikTok beauty trend. Back in the day, it was Vera Bradley backpacks, Juicy sweatshirts, EOS lip balm, hair feathers, Webkinz, and the Old Navy $1 flip-flop sale. If you know, you know. That was like the best day of my life every year, and I miss that. I miss the flip-flop sale. Bring back the Old Navy $1 flip-flop sale. Like, does it still happen? I genuinely don't know, but I would love to know if it still exists. When a product and then a brand becomes a universally understood experience, they've won.
they have succeeded in top-tier brand marketing. And it's often only downhill from there because they've peaked, so where else is there to go? But the idea of must-have items with a cult-like following is not a new concept. Today, it might be the Stanley Cup. In the height of the Apple empire, it was the newest iPhone. In the early 2000s, it was the newest Harry Potter book. In the 90s, it was Beanie Babies. And in the 80s and the 70s, it was, I'm going to tell you in a few minutes. That is the subject of our story today. But anyways, iPhones, Harry Potter, Beanie Babies, hair feathers, EOS lip balms, crazy Black Friday shopping, and all the frenzies that come with it. Our society has perpetuated this culture of obsessive consumerism for decades upon decades. The need to get your hands on the latest cool gadget or car or toy, and our fixation on not only whatever the object is, but the brand name attached to it. So I briefly mentioned Black Friday shopping. It's one of those holidays, all these holidays, is a time where people just go particularly insane over a product that they just need to get for their kids for Christmas or need to get for themselves or, you know, just everyone loves a sale and sales drive people a bit crazy. Also just like trendy objects. So the Stanley fiasco at Target, like people just obsess over these things. But before Black Friday was even this crazy crowd-forming frenzy that it is today, people trampling store employees as they stampede into department stores and customers literally shooting each other with handguns over toys in Toys R Us, that actually happened, guys. There was the toy that started it all. So this came before all of the stuff that I've just explained, all of these trends. This was back in the 1970s. There was a toy that began everything, and I'm going to talk about that today. So what was this toy that came about in the 1970s that experts think began obsessive consumerism? Like literally the kickoff, the shot heard around the world that started this whole thing. And what was it? It was the Cabbage Patch doll. Cabbage Patch Kids, Cabbage Patch Dolls, whatever you want to call them. So at the mention of Cabbage Patch Kids, it's probably a core memory unlocked sort of moment for some of you out there. Some of you might need to Google a photo and are like, what are these things? I actually don't know. Or some of you, this was me, honestly, I knew the name Cabbage Patch Kids, but I just couldn't, like, I was like, wait a minute, where do I know this from? And I looked up a photo and sure enough, like I remember these dolls. I didn't personally have one of the old school ones from the 70s. I mean, I was born in the 90s, but I had the newer variety of Cabbage Patch dolls. Pretty much it's like a chubby cheek, round-faced doll with hair made of yarn and like no chin. Like it's literally like a little baby. It looks like a baby, but a cartoony sort of baby with, yeah, I think the most notable feature is the chubby face, like the circular, very round face. Sometimes they had freckles, but it had like yarn hair. Pretty much it was a doll. It was a baby doll that literally caused chaos. And we're going to talk about that today. I will tell you the very interesting tale of Cabbage Patch Kids, how they pretty much started obsessive consumerism, how they came to be, how they became popular, and how the invention was literally stolen. Okay? Like there's tea here, there's drama. So there's magic, there's intrigue, there's lawsuits, you name it, it's part of this story. So let's start at the very beginning. In 1976, Xavier Roberts, a 21-year-old art student, stumbled upon the art of needle molding, which was an old German technique for fabric sculpture. Xavier started creating dolls with this technique that he would soon call little people. And I imagine, I'm kind of visualizing the way that he created these dolls, was a lot like sculpting with cotton-stuffed pantyhose. Easy to manipulate, but hard not to rip. Very delicate. And he paired the dolls with miniature clothing that he quilted by hand. So Xavier made these dolls. He started this in 1976. In early 1978, so a couple years later, Xavier entered into the Osceola Art Show in Kissimmee, Florida. I've actually never known how to pronounce that. So he entered this art competition and won first place for his handmade little people. Interest in the dolls soared, and not just because they were cute. They weren't really revolutionary in that way. There were a lot of cute dolls. What really sold a lot of people on these dolls, the Little People dolls that would ultimately be called Cabbage Patch Kids, was the unique adoption experience. Each doll was one of a kind, and they each came with an adoption certificate, a birthday, and a name that was special and unique to that doll alone. So it became this collectible, you know, and something that was special, more special than, I don't know, I'm thinking of personally what other dolls were available at the time when I was very young, like Bitty Babies and things like that, or Annabelle, Baby Annabelle. But back then, you know, this was a very unique thing where it became a special doll unique to you and you wanted to collect them all, you know? It kind of reminds me of a Build-A-Bear, Webkinz, definitely more like a Webkinz, because I guess Webkinz you could name yourself, and American Girl dolls, you know, that sort of thing. If you know, you know. But this was the late 70s/80s version of all of this, what started it all, what inspired all of these later dolls that would come into market. So after Xavier gained traction at the Osceola Art Show, he started parading his creations at arts and crafts shows across the South. The obsession with his Little People dolls continued to grow. The adoption shtick of it all was golden, and kids everywhere wanted a unique doll of their own. By the end of 1978, so really quickly, like this happened very fast, he created the dolls in 1976, went to this art show in like early 1978, and by the end of that year, he realized, he's like, oh shoot, I have to do something about this. Like, this is a big deal that I have. I need to get organized. So he incorporated the concept as Original Appalachian Artworks, Inc. So he trademarked it. I'm pretty sure that's what it means. So when that was all happening, he realized he also needed a new name because Little People just like didn't do it for him. So he decided to change the name to the Cabbage Patch Kids. And the Cabbage Patch Kids, let's talk about that name. I've never understood why they were called Cabbage Patch Kids. Like, where is the damn cabbage patch? What is this all about? Like, do these kids, are they from a cabbage patch? Are they hanging out with rabbits? Like, I don't know where these things came from. So there's actually a legend behind the name Cabbage Patch Kids. Xavier and his team that he gathered to work alongside him on this crafted a legend to add depth to his growing brand. So along with the adoption thing, it's honestly marketing genius, having a folklore story to go along with this breed of dolls. So let me tell you how this story goes, the story that Xavier told, and that was like where the name came from. So Xavier himself, he was playing in the Appalachian Mountains and stumbled across a peculiar looking creature. He could only describe it as a bunny bee, which is exactly like it sounds, a body of a bunny, wings of a bee. Xavier watched it in awe, but then it flew into a waterfall and disappeared. He thought it was lost, but it came back and begged for Xavier to follow it. Xavier followed the bunny bee behind the waterfall, where he found a cave with hundreds of colorful crystals inside of it. He was fascinated, but the bunny bee wanted to take him further. See, just given the timing of this coming out, are these dolls and like the time period of him creating them in the 70s, I would think he's like on an acid trip. Like, he's hallucinating. This is not real. I mean, of course it isn't. It's a story, but anyway, continuing. So the bunny bee led Xavier through the cave past more colorful crystals, and he suddenly realized it was a tunnel rather than a cave. He made his way through the cave, and on the other side, he was greeted by hundreds of bunny bees. They were sprinkling dust from the cave's crystals onto a peculiar-looking cabbage patch, so a literal place where cabbage, the vegetable, was grown under a tree. Upon further inspection of the tripped-out cabbage patch, Xavier realized that the cabbage patch was inundated with babies and small kids playing. From the nearest head of cabbage, a little boy came towards Xavier. He introduced himself as Otis Lee, one of the Cabbage Patch Kids. "What is a Cabbage Patch Kid?" Xavier asked him. Otis explained that Cabbage Patch Kids are babies born right here in this secret cabbage patch. The bunny bees sprinkle magic crystal dust on the mother cabbages, and that causes Cabbage Patch Kids to be born. Of course, this is like the perfect way for a parent to explain to a kid how babies are born. Where do babies come from? Oh, the cabbage patch. And like, you know, magic crystal dust is sprinkled on top, and that's where they came from. Boom, babies born. So Otis asked Xavier, "Did you come help us find homes of our own?" And he thought about this question very carefully. Then Xavier said yes. He promised Otis Lee that he would build a special place called Babyland General, where all the Cabbage Patch Kids and babies can live until someone adopts them. I've truly never heard such an intricately crafted background story for a toy before, but it really makes sense to have this story because kids eat this stuff up, like magical sparkly crystal dust on, you know, a cabbage patch under a tree and through a cave and all this. It really makes the imagination run. And it kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you guys remember this show growing up. It was called Dragon Tales. Do you guys remember this? And there was like, I don't know, sparkly dust of some sort. I'm thinking of the intro reel for this show. They sprinkled fairy dust on top of a dragon scale, and the dragons like came to life and they would like hang out with the kids. And yeah, like fairy dust. Everyone loves fairy dust. Okay. It's like the best. So anyway, I digress. Original Appalachian Artworks. This is Xavier's company that he created for the Cabbage Patch Kids. So he owned this alongside some friends from school. They pulled together the funds to make the legend come to life. In 1978, they purchased L.G. Neal Clinic in Cleveland, Georgia, and transformed it into the Babyland General Hospital. So that was in the legend. You guys might recall a few moments ago I said that the Cabbage Patch Kids were essentially born at this literal hospital. Like there was a hospital for dolls. According to the Cabbage Patch Kids website, Babyland is a child's wonderland, and it incorporates many aspects of the legend. So upon entering this beautiful estate, you're greeted by nurses. So people dressed up like nurses and check in as you would at any hospital. Then you're encouraged to go through swinging porthole doors to look at the nurseries. And in the nurseries, you would select a one-of-a-kind original Cabbage Patch Kid and adopt them that same day. These cannot be bought anywhere else in the world. So that was Xavier's vision. He wanted these things to be hard to get. Like you have to go to this specific hospital, fake hospital, to pick out your doll. And, you know, each doll was unique. So it was kind of genius, except for, you know, you'd have to live in the vicinity of one of these things. So that was my first thought. But so anyway, back to Babyland, the hospital. So we're still at the hospital. We've picked out our doll. And after that, you're moved into this other room where it's literally called the Magic Crystal Tree Room. And this is where Mother Cabbages go into labor. And you can witness the birth of an original Cabbage Patch Kid. Like, I'm just imagining the parents bringing their kids to this situation, watching cabbages give birth. Like, the parents are probably like, oh my God, like, 10 years ago, I was like, you know, ripping bongs at a party, and now here I am watching a mother cabbage give birth in a fake hospital. Like, what am I doing? Like, parenting is an interesting thing. The 70s were a different time. Like, this, again, this would not happen today, I don't think. I feel like there'd be something wrong with this. This would not occur. So after all that, after you witness the mother cabbages giving birth and you've picked out a Cabbage Patch Kid to take home, like a little kid is like, you know, has their doll. They're so excited. They're then invited to an adoption office at Babyland. This is all at Babyland. You go to an adoption office after that. You take an oath and fill out paperwork. Like, imagine children filling out paperwork. And the funny part about this, guys, I'm going to talk about this probably more later, but I actually saw an original Cabbage Patch Kid at this antique shop. I went to an antique shop when I was upstate with Jack, my boyfriend. We went to this antique shop. So I had told Jack that I was doing a story on Cabbage Patch Kids. And I hear, like, this place was massive and we were the only two people in it because it was like right before they closed. So we're in the upstairs level of it. And I hear Jack go, "Katie, oh my God, you're gonna die. Like, get over here, you're gonna die." And I go over to where he's standing and lo and behold, there's an original Cabbage Patch Kid with the adoption certificate. So it came with, like, or it had the original, whoever had adopted this baby from the 80s. It was 1983. I'll have a picture up on the Instagram of what I saw, but it had the original adoption certificate that this little girl had adopted, like, this specific Cabbage Patch Kid in 1983 and had signed it. Like, it's just crazy now thinking that, like, this kid grew up and, you know, sent their doll off to an antique shop or a thrift shop or Goodwill or wherever, and it ended up here, and I'm staring at it right now with the original adoption certificate. Like, it was just spooky to me. Also spooky because I was about to do this story, so it was just weird timing. But yeah, so I've seen it's an actual paper adoption certificate that these kids would have to take an oath and fill out. Like, it's a very crazy concept when you think about it now. But yeah, it's like equally disturbing and also equally as intriguing, this whole experience. So you'd think that, granted, that was back in the 70s and 80s, is the Cabbage Patch Babyland still operating today in 2024? Apparently, it's still open to the public today. That's what we found when researching. So I guess you can still check it out. I don't know how much of it is still in operation. Like, are there still cabbage birthing ceremonies? I'm not sure, but yeah. So to summarize the different kinds of dolls quickly, there's a few different kinds of Cabbage Patch Kids. And of course, there's more now today, but back in the 70s and 80s, there were different types. So you had the originals that are hand-stitched, expensive, and reminiscent of Xavier Roberts' original Little People. And guys, these can be auctioned off today for like thousands of dollars. I actually saw some on eBay that were going for thousands of dollars. These original hand-stitched, like you could make a pretty penny from these things. So you have those, the originals. Then you have the exclusives that are the babies that can only be adopted at Babyland. And I believe these could also probably go for a lot as well. The one that I saw, I actually forget how much the one I saw at the antique shop was. I'd have to do more research. I didn't buy it because I was like, this is definitely cursed. Like, I don't like the looks of this. I feel like it's kind of sad that it's sitting on a shelf, but I feel like I don't like how personal this is, that like this child had signed this certificate and now it's here. Like, it just feels too personal. So you have those, the exclusives, and then you have the quote toys. And these were introduced in 1983 after Xavier sold the license to Colco Industries, a national toy company, via Schlafer, Nance & Company. This was also where the Little People were officially, quote, rebranded as Cabbage Patch Kids. They switched to vinyl faces, soft bodies, and memorable tufts of yarn hair, which substantially decreased production time and increased accessibility by lowering the price point, which, you know, happens with every toy that's made mainstream, you know. When the Cabbage Patch Kids toys launched at the International Toy Fair in New York City in 1983, the year that the one at the antique shop was signed, that's crazy, I wonder if this was there, it became the most successful new doll introduction in the history of the toy industry. Now that you hopefully have a better understanding of the scope of this brand and the offerings developed by Xavier Roberts, I want to circle back to the invention itself, like to the first inkling that Xavier had in his mind about creating these dolls, because it's a little fishy. Did he really come up with this invention on his own? And the answer is no. Xavier, to his credit, may have popularized and legally patented the dolls, but a woman from Kentucky named Martha Nelson Thomas is the real brains behind the operation. And Martha and her family spent years fighting for the intellectual property. Martha was a sweet old soul who created what she called doll babies back in the 1970s and sold them at craft fairs. I'm gonna have a photo of Martha on our Instagram, Found Objects Podcast. She looks like the kind of lady like that you just want to hug. Like, she just looks like the sweetest, kindest sugar cookie of a lady. And she coined the entire adoption idea behind Cabbage Patch Kids. So not only did she create dolls in a very similar technique to Xavier, but she came up with the entire selling point, like the entire thing that made Cabbage Patch Kids so popular, this woman came up with and got zero credit. And Martha's husband referred to these dolls as their family. Her intent was never to make money off of them. She just wanted to enjoy her doll babies and let people adopt them who would enjoy their company as much as she had. Martha's booth at these craft fairs was widely sought after in the art community and attracted a lot of attention. It even attracted a certain particular Mr. Xavier Roberts himself. He visited her craft booth and ripped her off. It is absurd that we don't talk about this more. He even bought several dolls himself, and he was, quote, so inspired by her concept that he went back to art school and started crafting some of his own. But he didn't stop there. He sold her doll babies, guys. He literally sold this woman's creations as his own and his own replicas at a local gift shop, and was even hosting his own adoption events, like using her dolls, which is so effed up. It was garnering so much attention that rumblings of doll babies in Georgia made its way back to Martha in Kentucky. Despite being soft-spoken, Martha mustered up the courage to confront Xavier in Georgia for stealing her art and her ideas, and then on top of that, selling them without her consent. From the look and feel of the dolls down to the adoption process, it was literally all the same. And it must have taken her so much courage to do that because she was such a sweet lady. She literally didn't even want to profit off of her dolls. Like, that wasn't what this was about. It was about the principle. This wasn't right, and it just wasn't fair. And it kind of sucked the joy out of what she was doing, you know, knowing that someone was stealing and profiting off of something that she didn't even want to profit off of in the first place. But despite asking Xavier to informally cease and desist, he wouldn't oblige. He basically came right out and said, if I can't sell your doll babies, I'll sell something just like them. And that's exactly what he did. From there, he entered his own doll, an Xavier Roberts original, into the Osceola Art Show in 1978, and he won. So remember, I told you guys that he entered dolls into that art show, and that's kind of what started the whole movement. And those were his original creations, technically, but they were inspired by Martha. He gave her no credit, and he had previously sold her stuff, pretending like it was his. Like, he's a shady character here. So that sucks that he succeeded off of her ideas, off of a woman's creation. He stole the show, which is really unfortunate. So from there, from that win at the Osceola Art Show in 1978, Xavier, you know, created these little people, and Martha's doll babies were being effectively swept under the rug. He knew it, and she knew it, but that didn't stop him. Martha's husband claimed that she wouldn't have pursued any form of retribution against Xavier on her own. Her loved ones wanted her to get the recognition she deserved for ideating the most popular toy of that time. So in 1979, Martha's camp sued Xavier for intellectual property theft, but it didn't actually get to court until 1985. And at this point, Xavier had blown up, and the little people turned Cabbage Patch Kids had become a cultural phenomenon. So no one even cared about the lawsuit. Like, people, it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. Today, I think things would be different with TikTok and all. I feel like Martha would have been able to make her case, but at that point, Xavier had also already sold the Cabbage Patch license to Colco for national distribution. So back to the case that Martha made, there was a sizable settlement because, of course, there was money, so she was kind of paid off. But the trial was so drawn out that in the end, Martha just wanted credit for the idea. There are photos of Martha with dolls whose likeness is the exact same as Xavier's dolls, dated 1975, so years before his art show victories, literally proving the idea as being her work. She could have copyrighted the doll babies, but stitching a physical copyright symbol on them ruined the art in her eyes. She truly was just this sweet lady that wanted to make dolls and wanted people to enjoy them and didn't even want to profit. So it's just very sad. And again, I'll have photos on the Instagram, the photo I just talked about her with these dolls. Like, you can kind of look at the similarities between the ones that Xavier made, and they're literally the same thing. This woman was ripped off. Martha was such a juxtaposition to what Cabbage Patch Kid toys became and the shopping frenzy they induced in 1983. Yes, this is where things get gnarly. The dolls incited what is now referred to as the 1983 Cabbage Patch Riots, sometimes dubbed the original Black Friday. So imagine this. It's 1983, the year of the Cabbage Patch Kids. There are simply not enough toys to go around. Like, people are so obsessed with these things. They're flying off shelves as is. But now it's the holiday season, and you want to get one for your kid or you know, someone in your life that wants one of these dolls, and you hear rumblings that on November 27th, there's going to be a restock at your local department store. There's a limited quantity, and people want to be the first in line, to be their kid's hero, to get one of these dolls. They want to be parent of the year. So they park themselves outside of this store at 7 a.m. Doors open at 9 a.m. So 2 hours you're waiting outside. Who will walk away with a coveted Cabbage Patch Kid, and who will go home empty-handed? Like, it's drama, guys. It is dramatic as hell. There's no online shopping. You physically have to be outside of this store. It's crazy. I actually remember doing this myself, not for a Cabbage Patch Kid toy, of course. Like, I was, you know, past that time in, I guess, the early 2000s. I remember waiting outside Best Buy to get a Wii, like the new Wii. I remember having to wait outside for that, like with my dad. And it was a cultural experience. It really was. I loved the Wii. I loved Wii bowling. That was fun. Anyway, so back to 1983. People are waiting outside, thrilled, excited to get their hands on one of these Cabbage Patch Kids, but there just simply weren't enough to supply the demand. But of course, people were willing to take drastic measures to get a Cabbage Patch Kid. In Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, the door to a department store opened, the shelves were stocked with Cabbage Patch Kids, and hordes of people swarmed the store to get their hands on them. Adults ripped dolls from the hands of children. Guys, full-grown adults ripping dolls out of the hands of children. First of all, why were children there? I don't know why they were there. Like, I feel like this, maybe people didn't think it was going to be as dramatic as it ended up being, but like, I would not have my kid anywhere near there, like, if this was like happening today. But adults ripped dolls from the hands of children and raced to the checkout lines. Fights broke out left and right. The store manager, William Shego, grabbed a baseball bat to protect himself amidst the pandemonium. He told the New York Times, "It's my life that's in danger." It got so out of hand that police had to come and disperse the crowds, and a woman reportedly broke her arm, and four others were injured when the mob of 1,000 people stormed the store. All of this over dolls. Dolls, guys. Like, Kim, people are dying, you know? It was a similar scene over in Milwaukee. Ronald Ladowski, an assistant manager at a department store, said, "There's never been a toy like this. I wish we had 10,000 to sell. In fact, I wish I was the owner of Colco." And remember, Colco was the manufacturer that, you know, mass produced these dolls. In Charleston, West Virginia, which I didn't realize there was a Charleston, West Virginia, but in Charleston, West Virginia, about 5,000 shoppers stormed a department store that only had 120 Cabbage Patch Kids to sell. The math is not mathing. It literally caused a riot over a toy doll. And this was a shared experience for shoppers during the 1983 holiday season, referred to as the 1983 Cabbage Patch Riots. Andrew Jenks, documentarian and creator of, quote, Billion Dollar Babies, explained in an interview with Fast Company that it was a very clear example of how scarcity can create fear, which can create higher demand and more press, and so on. Due to the widespread unrest caused by these toys, the U.S. government ended up making a false advertising charge against Colco, saying they were, quote, harassing children by running ads for unavailable products. Colco was forced to discontinue any further advertising campaigns, which for some reason just fueled the consumer fire even more. So it kind of backfired. Eventually, the Colco supply of toys caught up with consumer demand. The madness leveled out, but the interest in the dolls did not subside. Keep in mind, there were about 150 licenses for Cabbage Patch Kids. So there were dolls, but there were also accessories, diapers, and apparel. The list goes on. It was a beast of a brand, and at the time, they were the industry's golden child. By the end of 1983, almost 3 million babies had been adopted. By 1984, Cabbage Patch sales hit over $2 billion worldwide, hence the name of the 2023 documentary, Billion Dollar Babies. And I highly recommend to watch that, by the way. It's a great documentary. By 1985, 20 million Cabbage Patch Kids were adopted. 20 million, guys. 20 million. This is only... So it became a mass-produced product in 1983. By 1985, 20 million of these dolls were adopted. Like, I can't even fathom that many, but that's a crap ton of dolls, okay? Oh my God. Now, the moral of the story is summarized beautifully by the documentarian Andrew Jenks. There have definitely been mobs for toys and different things throughout history, but we started to realize in 1983 that this might be the first time there was something that came out during the holiday season where there was that level of lines and just overall madness. It feels like in some ways other companies realized how they could use Black Friday and holiday shopping as a real marketing tool in ways that maybe hadn't been done before. So again, this is kind of where the Black Friday frenzied obsessive consumerism began, people think, in 1983 with the Cabbage Patch riots. Fast forward to the late 80s, early 90s, the Cabbage Patch Kids' popularity was diminishing a bit and the toy company Colco filed for bankruptcy. And while I'm not really sure why they ended up going bankrupt, like it doesn't feel like they should have gone under, but they did somehow. But the dolls continued to be produced. They just were produced by different companies that you might recognize the names of. I recognize the names of all three of these: Hasbro, Mattel, and Toys R Us. So they were still being produced, just not by the original Colco. And the collectability of Cabbage Patch Kids, even after the 80s and 90s, it still lives on. Back in 2012, an episode of My Strange Obsession aired on TLC. Wait a minute, is it My Strange Addiction? Or did they rebrand it? I think they actually might have rebranded it to My Strange Obsession because maybe of addiction culture and it just like didn't sound, it wasn't like PC. Wait, is this one of those like Mandela effect things? Like, has it always been My Strange Obsession, the show on TLC? Okay, I don't know. I'm having like a brain fart right now, but on this show aired on TLC, it featured a couple who has spent $1 million on their Cabbage Patch Kids collection. They had collected 5,000 dolls as of 2012. And if you look up photos, they have an entire room dedicated to these dolls. And it's yeah, so they're still collectible. Like I said, they're going for thousands of dollars on eBay. So you can still get your hands on a new Cabbage Patch Kid doll today at Target, Walmart, or on Amazon, of course. But like I said, you'll often see those older dolls, the collectible, like super old dolls with their original adoption certificate on eBay and other auction sites for anywhere from $2,000 to $200,000, depending on their rarity. Very wild. Hang on to your dolls, guys, no matter what brand they are. American Girl dolls, everything, because you never know how much they'll be worth someday. So nowadays, post-COVID and with the rise of online shopping, I think we can all agree that Black Friday will never be the same as it was before. Like, even in more recent years, like, of course, like, not the same extent as the Cabbage Patch riots, no lines wrapped around Best Buy, no staggering discounts at our favorite stores. But I feel like with the rise of online shopping, it's just never going to be the same. Because at the end of the day, like, people are lazy. And I love Cyber Monday. Like, I live for Cyber Monday. So I don't even feel like Black Friday is as much of a time to be alive for me personally. Like, there used to be this whole time period of like Black Friday sale hauls, like we do hauls on YouTube, and I feel like those are fewer and further between now. Like, you don't see as many of those. So, but again, that doesn't mean that there's been a death of obsessive consumerism. People are still obsessed with certain trends and collecting things like the Stanley Cup. You know, there's endless content on the internet about Stanley Cups right now. Stanley Cup collections, Stanley Cup hauls, Stanley Cup favorites. Like, over on TikTok, there's just endless videos about these cups. And they have this cult-like following in the average American consumer, just like the Cabbage Patch Kids. It's a true commodity. So while the obsession with Cabbage Patch Kids and Babyland and the lore and all of that has kind of subsided now, you know, people are still collecting them to this day. They're still talked about. You know, ask your parents about them. They probably have endless stories. And we still see them on shelves in Target and the like, and at antique stores with the original adoption certificate. So they're still floating around today. Even though the trend has kind of died, they're still relevant and still something to talk about. But again, like, we need to talk about the important thing here, that Xavier ripped off our girl Martha. Justice for Martha, soft-spoken Martha in Kentucky. What was her last name? Martha Nelson Thomas. Martha Nelson Thomas from Kentucky. We cannot forget about this woman. Xavier Roberts stole from her, and no one talks about it. Xavier Roberts was a millionaire, okay, over this idea that he ripped off of a woman named Martha Nelson Roberts, and we cannot forget about her. So I want that to be like one of the parting remarks of this episode, that Martha deserves recognition for her creation. As Josh Clarkson, a marketing professor at the University of Cincinnati, said to USA Today, "It's really cool to see so many people from all these different walks of life connect and bond over something that is seemingly trivial. So whether it's a Stanley Cup or a Cabbage Patch Kid or an EOS lip balm or any of the other things I said earlier today that, you know, have been a trending object, a trending item that people just simply have to have." I mean, I'm thinking also, like, I don't know why this just popped into my head, but did anyone have those pink, like, not Victoria's Secret, but pink, like the sister brand, those body sprays? I collected all of those body sprays and they lived in my locker in middle school gym class. Like, I would have a locker, we all had lockers, and those would live in my locker, and girls would come over and ask to borrow one, like, and I was the keeper of the pink body sprays. I felt very cool because of that. And so that feeling, like the feeling of having something that is trending, like it gives you that like serotonin boost almost. And it's interesting. Like I want to do a whole episode just debunking the psychology behind that, the FOMO of it all, or just needing the newest thing. But at the end of the day, you know, you do feel like you're a part of something bigger than just yourself. You feel like you're a part of a movement. And it feels good to be able to keep up with the Joneses, you know, but at what cost? At what cost? A woman literally broke her arm in the Cabbage Patch riots of 1983. Like, she broke her arm trying to get a doll, and parents ripped dolls out of the hands of kids. Like, adults, adult human beings ripped dolls out of the hands of children. Like, sometimes it goes too far. It goes way too far, guys. And ultimately, what? It's bad for the environment, right? So, not to pull that in there, but it's true. So, the big question here is, what will be next? What will be the next big thing? I'm genuinely so curious. And I can't think of it right now, but there will be something. There's always something. The same way that there's always a new trend on TikTok, a new, you know, clean girl aesthetic, strawberry girl aesthetic, like, you know, all of these different aesthetics, the same way that's the case, there's always going to be a new it girl product. And it's just a matter of, like, do we want to be a part of that culture all the time? Is it kind of exhausting? You know, is it? So just some food for thought in this episode today, a dangerous collection. So definitely make sure you tune in next Wednesday. Check out our Instagram, Found Objects Podcast, where I always post visuals from each episode. I'll be posting video clips. And what else? You can comment and interact with other members of our community that I want to build. I want this to be like a little community of sorts where we talk about things like, have you ever had a Cabbage Patch Kid? What do your parents say about them? Like, did anyone's parents or older siblings or whoever participate in the Cabbage Patch riots? I'm genuinely so curious. Tell us all the tea over on Instagram. Thank you all for listening. And remember, things are not always as they appear. This episode was produced, edited, and told by Katie Bellotti. Research by Sarah Schilling. Podcast artwork by Siri Devlin. Follow us on Instagram at Found Objects Podcast. Tune in next Wednesday for a new episode. Goodbye.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.